You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, our good friend Yogi Roth, you knew him and you loved him on the Pac-12 network. You can now see him as part of the Big Ten network coverage. Coming up this weekend, he'll have UCLA and Nebraska. You can also find Yogi Roth. He's got a new project that is going called Y Option. And it is a college football on the western part of the United States, through the lens with Yogi, more or less. Video, audio, some written content. You can find it at yoption.com. Yogi joining us now. Where are you right now? Set the scene. Are you surfing? What are you doing? Southern California guy.
I am en route when we're done to go pick up our oldest son at school, go to a little Taekwondo Halloween party. And you know this as a broadcaster as well. Like Wednesday nights is pretty much a family night because you're on a plane the next morning. So I'll just kind of hang with these two dudes and my wife all night and at some point start to pack and put a suit in a bag and off we go to Lincoln to call UCLA Nebraska.
I love that. The Big Ten Network experience for you so far, is football just football, or how do you, when friends are asking you, Yogi, how is it different now for you to see some of these teams playing in that conference, what do you tell them?
Well, I think it's a couple things. I think first, I'll always start with the people. Like, it has been an incredible experience, much like the Pac-12 networks. The people are awesome. From the executives on down, it's been really fun. And, you know, it could have been awkward, right? It could have been a little funky of here come these new people that are coming from the West Coast. And, you know, there's Ashley or myself or Guy Haberman, et cetera. Like, all of our colleagues have been just phenomenal. So that's the first thing. Like, the experience is enjoyable. I love that. Like, two, is going to these new campuses has been energizing in a different way. It's a new experience, right? So my curiosity is always going to be piqued on how our teams, you know, navigating different elements of the X's and O's side of it, and of course, all the new things that are happening around the sport. And then the other thing I've learned is that, like, we're all, like, so connected. Right? Like, I've known Tony White, the D coordinator at UCLA or at Nebraska for 20 years. I met him when he was at UCLA, and I was coaching at SC. You know, Matt Rhule and I have become, you know, connected just based on mutual friends. Like, he referenced to me that the book that I co-wrote with Pete Carroll, like, really impacted his life when one of his children was in the NICU, you know, 15 years ago. Like, so you find you've got all these unique commonalities. Like, the OC at Michigan is one of my teammates from Pitt's, you know, younger brother. So that's kind of been fun. I would say also, after about 6 weeks, I felt like I kind of did at the Pac-12, where if you asked me a Pac-12 question, I could probably name three deep on every roster. I think the hardest part for me as an analyst this year is not the figuring out what teams are doing. I can watch that and figure that out pretty efficiently. It's then who is actually doing that. Like, who is Ty Robinson, this defensive lineman, who, you know, is a version of somebody from the Pac-12 that I had known since signing day? And it took about 6 weeks for me to be able to have some recall of, okay, I can tell you about this guy and be confident about his backstory. So that's been a different challenge. But overall, it's been really enjoyable. We've had really fun games. You go to new venues, and I feel like I know the country even more so than I tried to when I was knee-deep on the West Coast. And now I still try to represent the West Coast, to your point, at Y Option with myself and Jim Thornby. And, you know, we're never going to lose, you know, hopefully the concept of college football mattering on the West Coast. And hopefully we bring that to the booth every weekend as well.
Help me with this, because it looks like Oregon has seamlessly transitioned into the Big Ten. Some trouble maybe at USC, even more trouble at UCLA. They're at different parts of their progression, but Washington as well, you know, dealing with a new head coach and what comes with that. What do you make of, let's start with Oregon, how smooth it has looked for Oregon to transition? They get the win over Ohio State. They're going to Michigan as a favorite. You know, does any of it surprise you, even how good they look or how comfortable they look in the Big Ten?
No, it really doesn't. You know, I think my biggest question coming in was not like, could these teams meet the physicality of that? It was really about, like, how do these defenses handle good quarterback play, right? Because you could talk about how good of these defenses were statistically in recent years, but they didn't have anybody named Bo Caleb or Michael, you know, throwing the ball in terms of, you know, Penix, Williams, and Nix. So I was always curious, like, how are they going to deal with, I think, improved quarterback play? I mean, I think out of the four schools you referenced, the backups at those schools would all be playing at certain schools in the Big Ten right now at quarterback. I really believe that. You could say Oregon might have the best quarterback room in America. I think they got three starters at the Power 4 level, Power 5 level, however you want to categorize that. And I think when I net of where we are now heading into Week 10, if it was the Pac-12 of old, would SC still have the similar losses? Like, maybe. You know, I don't see much of a difference right now in terms of would Oregon be dominant in regardless of league. Like, I think they would. And they're really physical. I think they're the most improved team in America. I called their opener against Idaho. And you go back and watch their most recent game against Illinois, and I think every week we've watched them grow and improve. I think did the travel at Minnesota contribute to USC losing? I don't know. They might lose the same game against Cal. You know, like I don't know if I see that as being the reason that these three other teams are down compared to expectations. You referenced the rebuild. Obviously, that same deal at UCLA as is Washington. And then the Trojans, I just think that they still don't have big-time impact players across the board on either line. And the ones they did on the defensive front seven, they lost Anthony Lucas. They lost Eric Gentry for seemingly the rest of the season. And I think they just don't have the depth to really, you know, fill some of those gaps. And then those gaps get exposed against teams like Penn State with Tyler Warren and 17 grabs and things of that nature. So the margin for error maybe is a little smaller than one might argue in that league because you don't have as many possessions based on the run game. But I didn't see, like, on the Pac-12, USC's 8-0 right now sitting atop the college football world. I think the struggles they've had would have shown up regardless.
Yogi, how fast can those other schools get back, or who do you see as being best positioned if you're looking at Washington and USC in particular? You know, I think UCLA's got a lot more work to do, but when you look at those other three schools, who feels the closest to maybe climbing back up into that upper tier?
I think it's SC right now. I mean, what is it, 14 points is the combined scoring margin of their losses? I think they're close. I've called it a foundational year for them since the spring and calling their spring game back in April. And by that, I mean, when you look at the second-year players across the board there, they're the foundation of this team, whether it's their second year in the transfer portal or as a redshirt freshman or true sophomore, the Braylon Shelbys of the world or these, you know, the left tackle, Elijah Page. Like, they're just going through the scar tissue that I think every big-time program goes through. And I think that they have, when you go year one, lightning in a bottle, best player in the world, relatively smooth schedule, no Oregon and no Washington on it. Year two, they try to fix the offensive line in the portal. Doesn't work. Year three, they're trying to grow it from within for the most part up front. And they're having their struggles, but I do believe that Lincoln Riley's going to get that thing back to the standard that USC is. You look at the future of that facility, what we know that program has the potential to be. Like, I'm in on that. I think they're going to be just fine. I think the fan base expected it to happen faster just because it did early on. But I see a solid foundation there. I think for Washington, what's interesting is that, you know, they might have a $15 million cap next year. Right? If you look at, like, what collectives, you know, you want to project that. And I say that because in year one, especially when you get the job as late as Jed Fish did, you don't want to spend all that money just to spend the money. You know, you don't want to just get players to get them and overpay for them. Like, I think there's a strategy for him and the NFL background that he and Brendan Carroll and Steve Belichick and you know, even Pat Chung's background of how to want to build this thing. And I had their game last weekend at Indiana. They want to make sure that they get the right guys and spend on the right guys. And I think they've got a lot of that quote unquote cap space for next year. I think for UCLA, it's kind of similar in terms of the late hire. And, you know, they kept all their guys for the most part. I mean, nobody really dipped when Deshaun Foster was the guy. And I think that's part of a reason of why he got it. And having just been there this past week, and we've called their last two games in advance of this, I think, again, like, they're another team that finally feels really good about their collective, right? Maybe a little late compared to others, but I think it's going to allow them to compete here in Los Angeles. So I think in 3 years, I think they'll all be in positions that are healthier than where they sit now. SC would probably get there faster, followed by Washington, UCLA, in my opinion.
Yogi Roth with us, Big Ten Network, yoption.com online, if you want to rate him and check out his content. Oregon gets this test at Michigan. It's not Michigan under Jim Harbaugh, but it's still going to the Big House. It's Ann Arbor. It's a brand name. You know, you've been around the Big Ten enough now to kind of see what's going on at Michigan. What are they missing right now that keeps Michigan from being a contender?
Well, it was the quarterback room. You know me well enough now, bro. Like, it's always about that room, and there's not a lot of oxygen there. And the way that, you know, they played so many guys early on, it just felt like, you know, where's the stability? And if you don't have it in that room, you can have it everywhere else on the team. And to me, they're kind of built like Utah of years past, of they can control the clock, tough defense, man-to-man aggressive coverage. Like, it's a fun style of football defensively and offensively. They want to just run through you and over you and then find tight ends on play action passes. But if you're down 14, they are not built to come on back. And I think we saw them early on in the season just navigate the turnovers. I think now, unfortunately maybe for the Ducks, they're going to get the best version of Michigan all season. I think they figured out the quarterback thing. Davis Warren is the starter, and they found a way to get Alex Orji on the field. I mean, Alex Orji, to me, I was there in training camp, and I think among the entire team, he was second in all of the explosive tests in the weight room and the summer conditioning and the vertical, the sprints, the 40, the 10-yard shuttle, whatever. He was number two in the composite among the entire team. And you're sitting there all season, and you're like, how come he's not playing? Like, you got to find him a role. Like, just get this guy in the field. And I think they've done that. I think Kirk Campbell, the offensive coordinator who I referenced earlier, I played with his older brother, Kellen, at Pitt. And I think that they've found ways to scheme up some first downs. They're going to make it hard on Oregon defensively because they're going to challenge every gap with the way they run the football. They'll try to shorten the game. And most importantly, they're playing their most confident after that game against Michigan State. I mean, Jonathan Smith could have easily, his team could have, not easily, but they could have won that game. Like, that's not a stretch of going into the Big House and getting the win. And then this weekend they have, again, the home crowd. I mean, Michigan's schedule has been phenomenal. I mean, they've rarely left that stadium, it seems like, all season long. So they'll have everything in their favor if the number one team comes into the country, or in the country comes to town. But ultimately, I think the Ducks, unless they turn it over, multiple times, I think they'll just do what I think the better teams in the Big Ten have done, which is just lean on you. And by the end of the game, they just pull away. I think that's who Oregon is. I think they're too fast, they're too physical, they're explosive. They'll get a couple of those, and they'll also be able to sustain drive. So I think they'll, again, prove they're the number one team in America, but they will get the absolute best from the defending champs.
Yogi, meanwhile, the big game in the Big Ten this week is Ohio State and Penn State, and, you know, some questions. I'm still trying to figure out who's great and who's really good. Do you have a sense on these two teams, how they match up?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, to me, Penn State, if you went and watched them practice, you'd say, whoa, like, they just look like they're supposed to look, right? Defensive front, the speed, the depth. I'm a big Drew Aller fan. I think every QB, as I referenced, needs some scar tissue. We got it from a year ago in this very game. Now we don't know if we're going to play in this weekend's game. They get it at home. There's a ton of pressure, I think, on both teams to, A, for Penn State, get over the hump and beat Ohio State. It's been a minute since they've done that. And then for Ohio State, like, what's going on? Like, you're lucky to get out, you know, unscathed last weekend coming off a bye against Nebraska. Like, just didn't look the part. Nebraska won a lot on the front, especially due to the injury at left tackle for Ohio State and Chip Kelly's offense. But I just think that Ohio State's the more talented roster. And I go back to, like, leaning on you. I just think that that's what they'll do on the road. Will Howard, who, you know, I love, a fellow Pennsylvania guy. He's a quarterback who wasn't recruited at Penn State, and now he gets to go back, and he can't wait for that environment. I think Ohio State will win that ball game, but I think we'll get a heck of a ball game. I think you've got four of the best backs combined on both of these teams. You have an environment that will be insane, kind of like the Michigan-Oregon game as well. And I think they both need to win it for different reasons, right? Penn State, if they lose, they're still in the mix. Ohio State loses, I don't know. Now it becomes argument time to try to get them into the playoff against whether it's my Pitt Panthers or the second-best team in the ACC. I think Washington State is squarely in the mix for an at-large berth. Could they get the number 11 seed? And you start to make these arguments across the board. And Ohio State, I don't think, can afford to lose that, knowing what they have on their schedule with Indiana, who's the story, at least in the Big Ten this year, I think, and of course, the rivalry game at the end of the season.
Yogi, how has the playoff expansion changed maybe the next month of the season?
Yeah, it's a cool question. I think that it's given hope to a lot of teams. I think right now there's, 2,000 players in college football, across 20-ish teams that are like, we got a shot at this thing, man. Right? From Boise State to Washington State, from Oregon and across the country, even those in Colorado probably think they have a shot at this thing. And I love that for the sport. I hated with a passion the 14 playoff in a Power 5 system. Like, that never made sense to me on any planet with the dramatic inequities, right? 8 games versus 9 conference games. We've talked through that ad nauseum over the years, man. So now with this expansion, like, you just have hope. And I think that's really cool. Like, I'm excited to see what the committee decides to do. I mean, they're hearing arguments. This is the week that conference commissioners and their staffs present to the committee members that represent every respective conference. And then they go into their meetings this weekend. And I don't know why it's the same night as election night, but it's what it is this year in terms of the first ranking. So it'll either be a distraction or no one will pay attention. I don't know, depending which way you're leaning. But overall, I love it. I really do. And I am counting. I've always said this about the committee. At some point, you can't always be a skeptic. Like, you got to trust that the bodies of work in college football felt that these people in the room are the most capable, intelligent, well-intended people and opinions when it comes to college football. The problem is that I think they net out differently when it comes to, is it best available? Is it the entirety of the work? Is it if you had a couple weeks off? Is it the best roster? And I think that all comes down to personal opinion, to be honest with you, having done the mock committee selection. So we'll see how it shakes out this first one, though. Especially for Coug fans, this is a huge ranking because you're going to find out what the committee thinks about your record of your Heisman hopeful quarterback, of a team that was banged up against Boise and a Boise team that took the number one team to the brink in Oregon. I think that's going to be the thing that all of us on the West Coast should be glued into this coming week because Washington State has a bye.
Yeah, and let's talk Washington State for a second, because you have such a good perspective knowing them from the Pac-12, knowing what they've been through. You know, they're facing the possibility, Yogi, of an 11-1 season that leaves them hoping for some chaos in front of them. What do you think Jake Dickert is selling right now to his team? And, publicly he's saying, hey, we need a bigger playoff, and if an 11-1 team can't get in, we need a bigger playoff. What's the message that comes out of that Washington State program?
Oh, it's I already know it. I just had John Mateer at Y Option that, so it'll drop later today. I think all college football fans would love hearing from a Heisman hopeful. And I asked him that specific question. Last year it felt like it was every time you can hit your, fist on the desk and say, hey, pay attention to us. You need to pay attention to us. Like, it was happening. And I think after talking to Coach Dickert and players in that program, the tune has really changed, and it's about just proving themselves right. They know what they can focus on, like at the old adage of control the controllables. But really, I think this team has the elements necessary in this era to compete and have success in the playoff. And what do I mean by that? I mean, they got a healthy culture, and they're really connected. The culture did not splinter. Players did not dip immediately, right? They lost Cam Ward, of course, and a receiver and a DB to two other respective power schools in Texas Tech and I'm blanking on the other one, Arizona State. Lost DB to Arizona State. Other than that, the team remained connected. The culture, every time you talk to a player, just continues to echo, like, it's not about starting fast. It's not about proving people wrong. It's about finishing. It's about finishing and proving to ourselves what we can go do. So let's go control that. And I believe that. And then I just go back to what I've been saying for a long time, is that this thing started in January, and when everybody could have left, when there's no TV deal, no schedule, no indoor facility, right? Like, they didn't flinch in Pullman. They went to work. That's why I always call them America's team. Because I think behind the team that you love the most, if you know anything or been around competitive sports, you're rooting for this team. Because they got screwed based on nothing that they did. All they've done is continue to beat power conference teams, right? Whether it's Big Ten team 3 years in a row, where they beat the brakes off of Texas Tech. I mean, they threw for 235 yards against the number one passing defense in America in Washington. Nobody's thrown for over 130 against UW. I just think when you start looking at that, and then a difference maker who's a dual threat quarterback, you have an offensive line with over 100 starts, and I think physically can navigate the other teams in the CFP, and a defensive front making a bunch of pressures. I just think that there aren't a lot of holes, and most importantly, they're healthy. They're the healthiest they've been entering a bye and now coming out of it to make a statement in this stretch run. The challenge will be, as the committee always says, it's not style points, and I think for them, there is an element of that probably this year when it comes to, okay, we're going to have to beat out an Ole Miss, right? We're going to have to beat out a three-loss Big Ten team or a two-loss, you know, Big 12 team or whatever, you know, whoever loses in the Big 12 title game. You comp them over Washington State, and that's going to be the positioning that the league is going to have to hit home. And also, I think it's also the facts. You know, this team's played at a high level, and if they can finish that way, they'll have a great argument. Then I think people will be rooting for them to get in.
I've been looking at Y option, you know, and you've always gone beyond and kind of taken people into the you know, film room and helped people understand football. What's the aim with Y option?
Yeah, I think the whole goal is that when it started, I was going around last season calling games on the Pac-12 Network, as you know. And every AD I talk to or coach, I say, how are you going to tell the stories of your players and your program next year? And they'd all say the same thing, which is, I don't really know. Right? There's no Big 12 network. Big 10 is loaded with a ton of teams. The ACC, I think, you know, they do a nice job, but, you know, you can see the Pacific Ocean from Cal Stadium and they're playing in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Like, it just has never made really sense to me. And you can just imagine that if you're not having great success, like national success, you're just going to be ignored just based on the amount of teams in every one of those leagues. I said, well, I spent about 20 years in this league on this coast. Why would I just say goodbye to all of those relationships, all of those stories, like people like Justin Wilcox, or, you know, we've talked enough about Washington State, let alone the teams that are in the Big Ten that I'm covering. Like, I want to create an environment where we can talk about college football through the lens of the West Coast and then eventually start helping out our friends on the East Coast. So I had Jake Budd on today, who's an All-American tight end from Michigan, called the Michigan State game last weekend. And now I think having him on will help educate Michigan fans on what Oregon is. And I'll talk about that. I'll talk about Michigan. And hopefully we can start having really thoughtful dialogue around college football through the lens of this West Coast. And felt like it's always kind of been a little underserved from living it for years. You always felt like you were in this fight trying to get representation or conversation around your schools. And I didn't want to stop doing that because I was just working, you know, for the Big Ten Network and covering just four of those teams. And it's been really fun, man, because I actually feel like now I know the country and college football in a different way, and kind of like we talked about it. And that's really what we want to provide. And then I think lastly is we're not going to scream and yell and say, fire this coordinator, bench this player. Like, it's always going to be thoughtful, whether it's around play calling, whether it's around the team, whether it's around, you know, an issue that happens off the field. And I think that's important. I think the next generation of, you know, John Canzanos may watch some television right now and think the best thing to do is scream. And I'm not into that, man. I never have been. I think the way to longevity is being thoughtful. The way to popularity might be to be hot take all day long, but I think you'll get weeded out or watered down. And you know, we're trying to do that. And, you know, it's been fun. And I think lastly, man, have a little agency in my own career. I think that's kind of been fun. You've inspired that. We talked about that on the bus at the national title game.
Like, you're right.
You know,
yeah.
Making a decision where, where you're, you know, I've got a family. I don't want to always be dependent upon somebody else's decision. Like, I'd like to think that, you know, we do a nice job when I get in the broadcast booth, and I want to do it until I'm at least 60. Felt like it was time to have a little agency in my career. And it's been really fun. It's been a ton of hard work, but I do it with a guy, you know, in Jim Thornby. I think our community is growing, and you know, if it doesn't work, that's cool. Like, at least I took a swing at it. And if it does, great. And it'll probably become something I never even anticipated anyway.
Big Ten Network, yoption.com. Yogi, thank you, man. Have a great game this weekend.
You too, bro. And if you do come down for the Rose Bowl, we'll find the water like we've been talking about for about a decade.
Go surfing. Yeah, we'll do the surf thing.
We're making it happen.
I'm all about it. I might surprise you out there.
I love it.
Who knows? Yogi, thank you, man.
In. Let's go, baby.
There he goes.
See you, bro.
There he goes, Yogi Roth. Look, we'll talk a little more about Michigan and Oregon in hour three. And what Oregon State needs to do during its bye week, besides get healthy. I want you to leave it here.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists, are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.